Good afternoon and welcome to the Accessibility Advisory Committee meeting and the 8th annual Richard W. Hettinger Award for the year 2020. Today on Monday, February 1st, 2021. To begin with, please note that this meeting is being recorded. We do place the audio of the meetings on our website for all the meetings, AAC, BRS, and Metro MAS. Just a few helpful tips for people joining via phone calls. You can press star 6 to mute and or unmute yourself. If you would like to make comments, anyone joining through any member of the public joining, you can also make comments during public comments section. You can virtually raise or lower hands by pressing star 9. You can press star 9 again to lower the virtual hands. Everyone joining via video conference, you can click on the speaker icon to mute and or unmute yourself. If you go to the participant list, you can click on the hand icon to raise or lower your virtual hands. That indicates your intent to speak. Please know that we do have interpreters with us on for this meeting. It helps them do their job well. I would ask anyone, when you speak, please state your name first. It helps everyone knowing who is the speaker, not only for the interpreters, for anyone joining via phone calls. It also helps them knowing who's speaking. Anybody who listens to the meeting audio afterwards, it also helps them. I do welcome one speaker at a time. So thank you in advance for that. As we have the Hettinger Award today as part of the AAC meeting, we would begin with the award ceremony and then return to the usual format of taking the roll call, followed by the meeting agenda, board report, and the meeting minutes and other topics of discussion. I would say that we have Sue Crawford with us. She is here for the award ceremony. We have our AAC members, we have the interpreters. We do have WMATA staff management with us on this call, a few members of the public. We have some of the past recipients of the Hettinger Award. Some of the committee members themselves are the past recipients of the award, such as Dr. Posner. We have Patrick Sheehan, Paul Samarford, Ms. Rush, Denise Rush. We have Robbie Worth with us. He is one of the past recipients. Lynn Winchell-Mendy has joined us. She is representing COG TPB with us, and she'll be speaking a little later. At this point, and I'm sure a few of the friends and family may have joined us. At this point, Dr. Posner, I would ask you to take over. You have the floor.
Yes, thank you very much, Anu. One of the things I'll ask you to do, if you can share your screen with the program so that the people that haven't received a copy of the program can follow along, I think that would be very helpful.
Absolutely.
And if we go to the program, I think we'll start off with Ms. Lopez, who's going to give some opening remarks. So Carol.
Hey, well, thank you, Dr. Posner. I am Carol Pareto Lopez, Director of the Office of ADA Policy and Planning in WMATA. And good evening, esteemed Accessibility Advisory Committee members. Ms. Susan Crawford, former Hettinger Award winners, WMATA staff, and members of the public. Welcome to the 8th Annual Richard Hettinger Award Ceremony hosted by the Department of Access Services. The award honors former Accessibility Advisory Committee Chair Richard Hettinger for his lifelong commitment to accessible public transportation and his tireless devotion to providing access for all citizens of the Washington metropolitan area. Today, the Richard Hettinger Award will be awarded to our departed friend, Charles Crawford, who has served on the Accessibility Advisory Committee for the past 6 years. The committee wants to honor him with this prestigious award as it represents the highest accessibility honor given by WMATA. Throughout his life, Charlie has demonstrated his strong advocacy for change towards the independence of people with disabilities. Charlie was a kind but firm advocate for accessibility. He advanced accessibility through his life. His contributions to this committee and to the world in general are innumerable. It is with great pleasure that I offer the opening remarks to honor a wonderful person such as Charlie. I have known Charlie for over 20 years. We met when we worked together on the Public Rights of Way Federal Advisory Committee for the Access Board. We bonded over the success of including the requirements for detectable warning tiles at curb cuts. During the committee discussion, I had made plans tactile by sewing the lines of the drawings with thread and needle because I couldn't see how Charlie and others could see what the details that we were designing and discussing when we were preparing recommendations for curb cuts. Our paths crossed again when he worked for the Department of Veterans Affairs and we were discussing the design of the Disabled Veterans for Life Memorial. And I was very happy to see him again when he joined Metro's Accessibility Advisory Committee representing the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments Access for All Committee. Thank you for joining us to honor Charlie's achievements as an advocate for accessible transportation. And I would like to now present Mr. Christian Blake, Managing Director, Department of Access Services, for his words of welcome. Chris?
Yes. Good evening, everyone. I hope you can hear me. And I'm sorry about the lighting. I'm still working on this. But I wanted to just briefly state, like Carol, I have a whole lot of wonderful stories I could share about Charlie Crawford, but I don't want to go in that direction at the moment. What I want to do is just thank everybody on this call. Normally, this program would be taking place either in late October or early November. We would be at Metro's headquarters having a nice reception, introducing each other or reintroducing and remembering good times and the accomplishments many of you have contributed to making WMATA the most accessible public transit system in the nation. We would have a light fair, and then we would honor yet another person or organization, individuals who have contributed to the accessibility of WMATA, and by extension, the accessibility of public transit throughout the nation. Because as WMATA leads, a lot of agencies follow, and I can speak to that firsthand, having come from another agency whose expectation was always to do as WMATA has done. And when I was honored to come over here to WMATA, you know, we inherited what was already a great system. And we take that challenge seriously. We recognize it, and it's our task each and every day and week, month and years now it's been, that we want to continue to improve the accessibility of the WMATA fixed route and paratransit services and the features and equipment that go along with it. We want to not only keep up with what the regulators, the Access Board and FTA and others and Department of Justice are recognizing as new and improved ways to be more accessible in public transportation, but as tonight is recognizing, we need and we want and always welcome advice, recommendations, and in a lot of cases, friendly direction, as we call it, from advocates like Charlie Crawford, and like those of you who've been honored in the past, and those of you who, you know, we've taken your advice, we've led, and you may not have been a Hettinger Award winner, but the fruits of your labor can be seen throughout this system when you've given us advice and we followed it. So I'm happy, I could say, despite what's going on in the pandemic that has caused many of us to make several types of adjustments in our daily lives and in programs like the Hettinger Award, I'm glad that the committee, the AAC, the Accessibility Advisory Committee, made the determination to move forward with not delaying a year in this. I was taking the position of being neutral, but I'm really happy that we're moving forward because pandemic or no pandemic, we should not take a year off or time off in recognizing those who have contributed to the accessibility of public transportation in this region and this nation. And I can tell you, Charlie Crawford, from my firsthand experience, as Carol Lopez has mentioned, Ms. Lopez has mentioned her firsthand experience, we appreciate and greatly honor the work he did and the education he gave me in terms of just people who are blind and low vision and certain things I should take into consideration and follow. And so we're gonna definitely miss Mr. Crawford. I'm glad we're honoring him. And I'm just glad for the leadership of the AAC that we're continuing to move forward with the Hettinger Award. And again, even though we're in 2021, this is the 2020 Hettinger Award, and I assure you we'll have a 2021 Hettinger Award program as well. Back to the leadership, Chairman Posner, but I thank you again for spearheading this. And I wanna thank Anu for putting it together, and Carol and the entire team of the Department of Access Services. Again, our commitment every day is better accessibility, safety, accessibility of our fixed route and paratransit services. And we are gonna continue that commitment and continue working with outstanding advocates and leaders such as Charlie Crawford and those of you on the AAC and the disability community at large. Thank you for this time this evening.
Thank you. This is Phil Posner. As the new kid on the block, I'd like to make a couple of introductory statements about Charlie and then turn it over to Pat Sheehan and Tino Calabia, who are the two nominators for Charlie this year, even though everyone on the committee knows him. And there are a large group of people that are attending that know him even better than we do, particularly his wife. And if they would like to add to anything we may have left out, please just raise your hand and you'll be recognized to make your statements. I've known Charlie and Raisin for the last 6 years, and it's been a pleasure working with him. The great thing about Charlie is his experience and his ability to dissect an issue and come up with a response and a cure, as he has done with the tactile tiles and implementation. But he also has a great sense of humor. I can remember the times he has suggested WMATA offer lottery tickets for people that wear masks. And the winner of the lottery would then get 1 week of free rides on Metro Bus. Also a way to raise money was to have a lottery for WMATA. His most recent issue has been working on the floating bus stops in Montgomery County. And one of the things I suggested to Patrick Sheehan was one of the ways we might honor him in addition to the Hettinger Award was to ask Montgomery County to put a plaque at the floating bus stops and name them as the Charlie Crawford Floating Bus Stop. And Patrick missed the point completely and said, but Phil, you can't do that. Charlie was against the floating bus stops because they were so dangerous. And I said, that's exactly right, Patrick. So there would be a vacant spot and no floating bus stop, but there would be a plaque that said the Charlie Crawford Floating Bus Stop, which was non-existent. And so that was the sort of thing that Charlie would appreciate and like. And having now picked on Patrick, let me turn the microphone over to him and let him say a little bit more about Charlie. Patrick, please.
Thank you, Phil. You're right about floating bus stops. That was a project that he assigned to a whole bunch of us to take care of. It's great to speak on behalf of Charlie. He's a very good friend, terrific advocate. I want to go back and describe for a couple of minutes Richard Hettinger. I've been on the committee for a long time. I worked with Richard Hettinger, and Richard was the individual back in the late 70s or 70s that started this committee, and it's gone through several name changes. I think at that time it was Elderly and Handicapped Advisory Committee. Richard saw a system which was constructed at the time, much smaller than it is now, that had no elevators. And he had an injunction put against the system that stopped the opening of the metro system so that elevators could be put in. And this kind of explains why some of the elevators are crammed into very strange places in some of the stations. But Richard was of the type that where he felt one person could make a difference. He advocated, he got the elevators put in. We in time were able to get duplicate elevators put in all the buildings and in all new stations now that we have what we call redundant elevators. Charlie was very much the same type of person. When he came down here and was working for the American Council of the Blind, I remember one of the first tasks that he suggested we take on was the introduction of the truncated domes, bumpy domes, as we love to call them, in the stations. There were some individuals, and I forget her name, I think it was Peggy, but I might be incorrect on that, in Massachusetts who had fallen over the sides of the tracks and been killed. And Charlie were close to individuals as he was the commissioner in Massachusetts and wanted to make sure that that was not going to happen in Washington, D.C. So he advocated long and hard, very much like Richard, to ensure that that these rail systems were going to be safe, usable by everybody, and accessible. And he, so Charlie, of course, as many people on the committee know, spent a long time advocating for the accessibility of not only the rail system and the rail cars, making sure that service animals, Raisin, and all his dogs that he had could use the system effectively and efficiently. He also worked in the areas of paratransit to ensure that the paratransit vehicles were accessible and usable, and advocated on behalf of the information that WMATA would provide to make sure that it was usable by people with disabilities. Charlie understood that when advocating with WMATA, that it was going to take time, but Charlie had the right personality, the correct nature, the firmness of intent to advocate, and if he had to disagree, he was not disagreeable. And everybody, and I think there are a lot of people in the audience and on the committee who know this, we all love Charlie because of what he, who he was, what he represented, his integrity, his passion. And so, Sue, as I've said many times before, we love Charlie. We love what he gave us, and everybody who, and that includes members of this committee, he made them feel, useful, wanted, appreciated their suggested, and treated everybody with respect. So kudos to Charlie Crawford. Thank you, Phil.
Great. Thank you, Patrick. Tino?
Yes, unlike Phil and Patrick, I've only known Charlie, maybe less than 4 years. But personally, I can thank him for sort of mentoring me. I've mentioned before that for my first meeting, I happened to sit down at the chair next to Charlie and Raisin. And from that time on, we would chat about a variety of things. But then when there were substantive matters that had come up or that should come up, I would ask him about them, and he would educate me on the issues. I'm glad that Susan is also here. I learned more about Charlie when there was a kind of online memorial service that involved folks from Boston and Massachusetts itself and the Northeast. And they were all fondly remembering him and also remembering details of what he did. I learned so much about what he had done both in the Northeast as well as in the US through the organization that he was involved with. But Susan, I don't know if you knew this, but during the conversations, someone mentioned that Charlie was once asked what was the highest achievement that he ever accomplished. And Charlie, without a second's hesitation, said it was in marrying Susan. I've got to remember that for when I go or my wife goes. I also was kind of fond of Raisin. Raisin was so peaceful sitting next to me and Charlie. And Raisin was already on in years. I wonder, Susan, how is Raisin at this time?
Thank you. Raisin is doing fine. I think she knows that this is the committee that she used to attend with Charlie because she was sitting up next to me for quite a while. Right. She's made the adjustment. You know, she and Caltag are here with me.
Hey, Raisin, where are you?
Yeah. She was very excited at the beginning. Yeah. And so I think she's happy to hear all of your voices. Okay. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Over to you, Phil.
Yes, Lynn Winchell from ADA, excuse me, from AFA. Would you like to say a couple of words?
I would. Thank you for the opportunity to say a few words in recognition of Charlie being honored with the Hettinger Award. So for over 10 years, Charlie was a member of the Access for All Committee, the Transportation Planning Board's Advisory Committee for transportation issues affecting older adults, people with disabilities, and people with low incomes. And also the former iteration of that, which was our Human Service Transportation Task Force. And I worked with him for about six of those years, pretty similar to, I think, his experience with all of you on the AAC. And he was one of two liaisons between our Access for All committee and the AAC, and it was an important bridge between the committees to know what similar work or work we were doing that could benefit each other. So Charlie contributed to AFA's discussions and initiatives from pedestrian safety to micromobility. We had some pretty in-depth conversations with his input on scooters, and their impact on people with visual impairments and people who are blind, and then also our long-range transportation plan, and then also his advocacy for improvements to Metro Bus, Metro Rail, Metro Access, and then alternatives to those, like Abilities Rise. And his experience and discernment are missed, and also that wonderful, kind smile of his. I think I've heard many people say he was very humble and a very kind man, had just a nice vibe about him. So we will miss those things about him, but his contributions to accessibility and equity in the region will remain. And I think we all can agree, as would the Access for All committee members, that this award is well-deserved. Thank you.
Thank you, Lynn. At this point, I'd like to throw it open to everyone that's in the room. And if you'd like to say something, please just raise your hand and then we'll recognize you in sequence.
Okay,
Paul Semmelford has his hand up first. So Paul, please go ahead.
Well, I want to say that Charlie has been a staunch and tireless advocate for people with disabilities, especially those with visually impairments or who are blind and or who are blind. It's such an honor that he gets this award. For the many Metro Access Subcommittee meetings he's attended, he's been always gave his opinions. We've respected his opinions. He gave valuable insight to help us make recommendations to customers, their Metro Access customers, and especially with Abilities Rides, using the taxi cab company. I just remember how he stood fast and say some things need to be done and change, and I'm going to put my mind to it and advocate my point for people, not only for myself, but people in my community. So we have options. I'm a past recipient of the reward. So to Charlie, I'm going to miss such a dear, dear friend on the committee, who's another tireless advocate. And with that, I'm going to pass it on to the next person. This is so deserving.
Barbara Millville.
Oh, Barbara.
Barbara, go ahead and unmute yourself. Dr. Posner, I think
perhaps Barbara just lowered her hand.
Right. I think she probably is going to reconnect. While someone else puts their hands up, this is Anu, and I just want to say that I have been with the AAC for the last 2.5 years, and I would say that it was great working with Charlie. As everyone has said, he was succinct, to the point, and he made his comments in a very firm yet gentle way at the same time. His sense of humor is missed, but I know that everyone knows that his work will be with us forever. I do see two people who want to make comments. Terry, I apologize if I mispronounce your last name, Pacheco, okay, thank you. Please go ahead and make your comment, and then Steve wants to make a few comments, so go ahead.
Thank you very much. Yes, it's Terry and Frank Pacheco. We're both here. We have known Charlie for 50 years, actually.
Wow.
And that's one thing that I will say about Charlie. When Peggy Kingman McCarthy was killed when she fell into the subway station pit at Davis Square Station in Somerville back in June of 1993, that hit all of us very hard, and especially Charlie, who was already very into advocacy at that time. And he literally, in every opportunity that he could from there on throughout the country, has advocated for tactile warning strips on subways. And I think the biggest thank you and award that WMATA could ever give to Charlie Crawford would to continue to have tactile warning strips in every single station on the entire WMATA system. And I do hope that everyone here realizes that even when Charlie had his aneurysm back about 16, 17 years ago now, 18 years. And he was in very, very incapacitated at the time. But the one thing that always came through, the very first conversations that he was able to have with us back then, was advocacy. Charlie Crawford truly had advocacy in his soul. And thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Hey, Anu, this is Barbara.
Welcome back.
Hi, Barbara, go ahead.
Thank you. I have known Charlie for 19 years since I moved to this area. And he's a breath of fresh air, something that I will remember about him is that he was an advocate for all, not just the blind population. And those of you who have been advocates for a while, we all know that that's greatly needed and often absent. And I would also like to say that Charlie could not have made this all possible if it were not for his wife, Sue. And sometimes the behind the scenes people don't really get a lot of recognition, but I want to recognize Sue. Thank you, Barbara.
Thank you, Barbara. Carol, you have your hand up.
I just wanted to add, as far as the detectable warning tiles, Charlie, we're going to be installing the final station in WMATA that does not have detectable warning tiles. We're going to be installing, we start this month.
Oh, that's great.
So that would be it. Arlington Excellent. Cemetery.
Excellent.
Susan, it was for you.
Thank you.
Dr. Posner, Steve messaged me. He would like to make some comments.
Oh, please. Go ahead, Steve. Unmute yourself.
Sure. Thank you. You know, of the many qualities of Charlie, the word that comes to me most prominently is the word wise. A very wise man, not only internally, because you could see that thought process going on throughout our get-togethers, whether or not he was actually, the center of attention and speaking. And the other quality was this, what he had a wonderfully soft sense of humor. It wasn't piercing, and it was never poignant and never directed at any particular individual or situation, almost to the point of being self-effacing. And when he used that, especially as part of his making a point, it truly not only crystallized Charlie as the human being he is, but also helped to make his point. He was never the first person to speak, but when he spoke, because of his style and because of his wiseness, we all listened. And I think more often than not, many of us said, aha. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. I don't see any more hands up, so what I'd like to do is ask Susan, who is the person who probably knew Charlie better than anybody else, if you'd like to say something to those of us who knew him less well.
Thank you. Am I still speaking? Can you still hear me?
Oh, yes, very well.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you very much. You know, Charlie would have found this to just be an incredible honor to receive this award. And it is just an incredible honor. And I thank you very much. It did arrive, and it is substantial. It is a very impressive award. And it's sitting in the dining room, in our dining room on the hutch. It's very impressive. I would say that Charlie really valued contributing to the Metro Advisory Committees. It meant a lot to him to be able to contribute, not just for the subway, not just for the route buses, also for the paratransit, and then also for Abilities Ride. And as Barbara said, it was important to him that it really be access for all, that everybody have, you know, everybody be accommodated. And so I thank you all for the incredibly good work that you do. I thank you for your asking about Raisin. You know, she receives a great deal of love here, and not just from Caltech and me, but also from, you know, our grandson and granddaughter, who love her very much, as well as son and daughter. So it's of course we miss him a great deal, and some days are better than others for me, but I just want to thank you again for this wonderful honor for Charlie. And if this is being recorded, I'll probably save that. It meant a lot to him to be able to participate. And even after he recovered, which took almost 2 years from his ruptured cerebral aneurysm, he went right back into advocacy. He just didn't even miss a beat. And so thank you all for continuing to speak up for people who need your services. And I thank you very much.
Susan, thank you. It is being recorded and it is on the website. And I think Anu, we might be able to get you a regular disk drive, flash drive version of the recording. The other thing I'd like to do is, since you are the backroom person who got him moving and doing stuff, anytime you would like to come in and become a backroom person with us or a front room person, please join the committee with any ideas or problems to do with any sort of transportation. We'd love to hear from you.
Thank you, because I was, as you'll know, as you remember from Barbara Millville and Charlie and others, back before the pandemic, I traveled by bus and the red line and then the green or yellow line to and from work every day. And Charlie and Barbara were just wonderful at advocating for the increased lighting in the metro stations, because it helped people see me, so that I was better able to navigate through the stations with my guide dog. And so I will continue to do that. Thank you.
No, that's super.
Dr. Posner, this is Anu. I would actually like to show what the award looks like to everyone. So I would share my screen for a quick moment so that everyone can see what the award looks like. And thank you, Carol, for helping.
Yes, and Anu, as I remember from my award, the lettering on the award is readable tactily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So this is a picture of the award and a picture of Charlie. This is a photo from American Council of the Blind from 2013. He was the former ACB executive director. And in this picture, he is holding a microphone, sporting a dark polo shirt, just to describe what he is wearing. And as it says on the picture, the award is, it reads as follows: Richard W. Hettinger Award, presented to Charles H. Crawford, 2020. In recognition of extraordinary contributions to the accessibility of all metro services for all occasions. At the bottom of the award, it has the accessibility symbol, followed by the metro logo. And underneath the M, it says metro.
Nice. It's beautiful. It really is beautiful. And I thank you very much. And thank you. He was just the most amazing person I've ever met. So anyway, thank you very much. Thank you.
Okay. I would stop sharing the screen at this point.
I think if we can, we should all applaud.
Yes.
Thank you. You can't be heard.
Give it a standing ovation for this.
Thank you. Yeah. I wish you all health and a successful year ahead, and stay safe.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Susan, and thank you very much for joining us and everyone who has joined.
Thank you.
I will stop sharing my screen at this point. Okay.
And Anu, if you might share your screen again with the agenda and rejoin the agenda, which will be the first thing that we need to do is the approval of the agenda.
Yes.
So if we can have a motion to approve the agenda.
Actually, before we do that, perhaps we can do the roll call.
Oh, definitely.
Okay, thank you. So for today's AAC meeting, the roll call is as follows. Alvar Ariza Silva. Darnese Bush.
Present.
Thank you. Tino Calabia.
Present.
Thank you. Vanessa Coles.
Present.
Thank you. Rico Dancy.
Rico is here. I can see him.
I saw him, yes. Thank you. Deborah Fisher.
I'm here.
Thank you. Melanie Jackson.
Present.
Thank you. Steve Caffin.
Present.
Thank you. Mary Kay McMahon.
Here.
Thank you. Philippa Mazzell. Anthony Oberg.
Here.
Phil Posner.
Present.
Thank you. Doris Ray.
Here.
Thank you. Denise Rush. I thought I saw Ms. Rush joining through phone. Paul Samerford.
Present.
Thank you. Patrick Sheehan.
Here.
Thank you. Kelly Simonov.
I'm here.
Okay, thank you. That concludes the roll call for today's meeting. Now going back to the agenda. Just for the record, I will put that up on my screen in just a moment. I would also read it for everyone's convenience. We just concluded the roll call and introductions of the committee members. We did the Hedinger Award ceremony. We will be going through the approval review, followed by approval of the agenda, last month's meeting minutes, and the board report. There is a committee discussion for AAC 2021 agenda. Mr. Blake will share information about old business, i.e. web booking, online meeting materials, and fair collection. We do have public comments section, followed by bus rail subcommittee report, metro access subcommittee report. At 7:20, we will have an update about AD Ombudsman. And at 7:30, the meeting will adjourn. Dr. Posner, at this point, I will ask you to move the meeting forward. You have the floor.
Well, thank you. First item on the agenda is approval of the agenda. And so without objection, I will assume the agenda is approved.
Approved.
If there is an objection, raise your hand or speak up. With no objection, we have an agenda. I assume everyone has an opportunity to look at the prior meeting minutes. And the same way, without objection, I'll assume that the prior meeting minutes have been approved. If there is an objection, please raise your hand. With no objection, the meeting minutes.
Hello?
Mr. Torres, I'm sorry, this is only for committee members.
Well, I was told at the last meeting that if I had an objection to the minutes, that I was allowed to speak. And I'd like to do so at this time, please.
I'm not certain if that's the case.
Well, I suggest you review the recording, sir, because there are specific things that are whitewashed in the last minutes that I totally and completely object to. And I'd like to make that very clear about these minutes.
What we have done in the past with non-members of the committee.
It's on a public
committee. This is a committee. This is the committee votes and makes comments on the
Yeah, Mr. Charles, what we have done in the past in that instance is we have invited the member of the public to submit their written comments to be added to the minutes as an addendum. So they will be in your very own words as you want them submitted. But these are the minutes that have been produced by our committee and accepted by our committee or rejected by our committee. As said, comments are welcomed and will be added without any editing. So you are welcome to submit them.
All right, I will do so. And I will also go back into the last meeting and get the precise words that were spoken at that time. Thank you.
Thank you. And the report to the board, it will be as is. The only thing I will add to the report to the board that you have not seen yet is I will mention the Hedinger Award and the ceremony that we had. So any suggestions from the committee for additions to the board report? And hearing none, I'll assume that we will go forward with the current report and the addition that I'll send to Anu describing the Hedinger Award. Next item on the agenda is the AAC 2021 agenda committee discussion. And what we have in the past done, because the bulk of our work is done at the subcommittee level, is request the subcommittee chairs, Mr. Clavia and Mr. Semelfer, to suggest what they would like us to add to our current agenda for the coming year. So start out with Tino.
Well, yes, today is the beginning of Black History Month. And given the turmoil in recent years, I think it's even more important that we keep in mind the principles of Black History Month and as they apply to all people. Let me also add that on February 4th, that is Transit Equity Day. And February 4th was picked because that is the birthday of Rosa Parks. And all of us know what she did and what she activated and what came of her bravery and persistence in not giving up her seat in 1955. So those are two things that I would like to mention. Well, I should say that I will send the seal or the logo of the Transit Equity Day. And in it, it says, for civil rights and a healthy planet. So it embraces many more things than just equity for any specific demographic, but also for what we should do for the earth. And part of what public transit does is not only move people around, but reduce greenhouse gas emissions, because to the extent that we're successful, fewer people will be needing to drive their cars. So I'd like to add that to what's in the agenda, that we've noticed that this is Black History Month, and that this is also the month in which we celebrate Rosa Parks' birthday by saluting Transit Equity Day.
Thank you, Tino. I'll point out that we might also consider, if we want to have any input to the current equity move that WMATA is undertaking. They have produced a statement of equity that they read at all of their board meetings and subcommittee meetings, and welcome to have everybody on this committee read through it and see if they would like to add something to it. I'm sure they would be quite happy to have us say we think it's great and quit while you're ahead, or if we think we might be able to make it a little bit better. So I might suggest that The other thing that I will ask you for bus rail, in addition to Steve wanting us to continue investigating route changes, particularly through DuPont Circle, things that we might look into with the 8000 series cars as they move forward. For Steve, I'd like to mention, if you listen to my report to the board, I did mention DuPont Circle to them last Thursday to look at, but those are some of the items that we might want to take on as a committee. And of course, we always have our fair policy that we're going to want to look at.
Phil, I noticed that, and I was very appreciative that you put a sentence in. Thanks very much.
So we will do that. So Tino, if there's anything else you think of, it's nice of us to find out that WMATA is doing a pilot project on the UV filters.
Yes.
For the air, which you brought to everybody's attention, which I think is terrific. And so once again, if you want to add to our agenda, continuing to look at safety, health safety, because February is also Heart Health Month and Women's Heart Health Month, then we can also add that to our working agenda for the coming year.
Sure. And if I or anyone else has something that could be added, will that be okay, Phil?
Well, yeah. Oh, that's definitely. I mean, you know, we always do this. These are living documents, and we change them from week to week. I'm also going to ask Carol if she thinks there's something that we should address that needs addressing, particularly the opening of phase two of the Silver Line, because I know we did that for phase one, and phase two is getting closer.
Yes, on phase one, the Accessibility Advisory Committee was able to visit the stations, but we are under a different situation now. And so unless the pandemic issues become less threatening, we might not be able to do that before it opens.
Well, I think anything we put on our agenda is going to depend upon what we can physically do and what we can do from non-travel.
Yes, perhaps we can share descriptions and photographs of these stations, but we can maybe take some videos somewhere where you have some sort of a virtual visit, if that's what the committee would like.
No, I think that would be super. I think what we can do is put that on our to-do. I think this is more of a wait list than anything else, because until we find out when we can do anything other than Zoom,
yes,
and information, is going to be a lot of virtual training. But that's one of the reasons for us to discuss what are the things we'd like to look at. And that even goes for one of our pets, which is fair policy, since the fair policy is a moving target based on what's going on Capitol Hill. And so it's almost weekly to monthly as things are changing. And there is joy at this moment as to what was put in, but there's not exhilaration until it gets passed and put into function. So I see Doris's hand up. So Doris, would you like to make a suggestion or two?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
I wasn't sure whether I was turned on. Thank you. First, I would like to suggest that with respect to Silver Line second phase, that at some point in preparation for that, we have a presentation regarding accessibility features, particularly at the Dulles Airport Station and at Ashburn, the two stations that are in Loudoun, and some briefing on the bus service that will serve those stations. And then also as a related item, how the a presentation on how the Loudoun County Board of Supervisors will and Loudoun County will become part of the compact. You know, what is its representation going to be? What is going to be their assessment in terms of financial support through the local subsidies? And then I also think that we should have periodic reports during this period going forward through 21 on restoration of bus service, transit bus service, for those of us who are remote or at least can only get to train stations, you know, and rail bus stations via bus is very important, but not just the feeder stations, because many of us travel bus to bus and never come near the subway, and many people in the public do. So I think it's, we need some kind of timeline for restoration of full bus service.
Thank you, Doris. Tina, you still have your hand up. Go ahead.
Yes. The pandemic is obviously with us and maybe for some time. I just read today in the Post that one of the epidemiologists or scientists who studies these said fears that perhaps the variant, which started or was reported to us first from England and now South Africa, that variant may be so dangerous that the vaccinations now being used may not be able to combat it. But my point with respect to us is this, that you may have seen the email I sent out today, which gives the CDC's position on masking. they have a firm position on masking, but with respect to enforcement, they are leaving it up to who knows who. They are not going to enforce it.
Can enforce it. They don't have
it. Well, let's let Tino finish.
Yes. And so an earlier email I sent out listed how COVID has struck down hundreds in New York, many in Los Angeles. We have been lucky and spared from having been so stricken. And we've only lost, I think, four people. Four is enough, four is terrible. But I fear for the drivers. I fear for the passengers, the riders, especially those who go onto buses. apparently, not everyone is convinced that they should wear a mask. And as a matter of fact, as a matter of politics, some are going to refuse to do it. And that endangers us all. So I hope we can somehow follow this and help WMATA in ensuring that the kind of CDC mandate for masks is strengthened, the message is strengthened, so that the problems from people who won't wear masks or can't wear masks will not adversely affect our drivers and other passengers.
Thank you, Tina. That was one of the public comments at this month's board meeting, and Mr. Wiedefeld responded to that as to how it would be enforced and dealt with currently on WMATA. And as we all know, it's difficult to enforce. The initial approach is to offer a mask at all levels through bus and rail. The second one is the driver does have the ability to shut the doors and refuse to move the bus. unless they put on the mask. And then if necessary and belligerency occurs, there is the capability of calling for police support. But it's a difficult issue every place in the country. And it's a question of safety of the drivers and the station managers for all of those. So it's something that I think we need to continue to follow. And if we have suggestions, we need to make them. Paul, you have your hand up.
Yes.
Please tell us about Metro Access. And one of the things hopefully you'll ask about is how Metro Access is going to work as the Silver Line is being extended.
So my comments of, you know, agenda topics for the whole committee as a whole that's outside of our committee. The first thing would be the next generation vans, just hearing updates from ADAP as Metro Access staff as to the how, you know, as we get new vans, this ideal van, you know, status updates from that filtered through AAC first. The second piece would be the our wonderful director of Metro Access has been giving us updates on the continue on the scheduling and reservations system with, you know, they're putting out a request for a proposal for new software that could be used on multiple fronts for both the staff there and for Metro Access as to bring us to make things more effective and functional for both customers and both the staff. So hopefully we'll continue to receive updates for that. The third piece would be safety. We still are living with COVID, and hopefully, you know, Metro Access staff, along with ADAP staff, will continue to seek out our, you know, advice or suggestions as it relates to keeping Metro Access safe and riding safe on COVID. If anything from like cleaning and procedures and that would, you know, affect customers and things like that. And unless I don't see Ms. Rush here, the only other major piece I think would be this new password change for easy for Metro Access customers when they log in online to book trips and do a variety of transactions. They hear updates about that too. But that would be the, also fare policy. I wouldn't be remiss to talk about that. You know, we are still engaging, you know, with the AAC. Hopefully they'll come, I don't know if this is the year of impact, how that, you know, affects service and things like that. But, the other piece you said, the Silver Line, I think the Silver Line right now, we would like to see how that affect Metro Access, but I think that's been put on hold given the pandemic and budget considerations of WMATA. But I know that's at least on my work plan to be discussed when the time is appropriate, if it's, you know, moving forward. But I've already began, as a committee, we began to talk about that, but that is on our work plan.
Thank you. I think we also need to look at bus and rail communications, since we have had a presentation of the new electronic maps that are going to be put in the rail. And there are a number of really good communication systems that are being used in other cities like Philadelphia that will make it easier to communicate next bus, next stop, next train and location. And so I think we need to continue to follow that as to how it's working and if there are ways that we can modify it to make it more effective for the ridership to see what is happening and what is going on. The other thing as to how these electronic communication devices are going to be useful for people with disabilities. Some of the things that we have been working on with wayfinding, I think we need to continue to look at and see how that's advancing. That grant has expired, and we need to see if there are going to be further advancements with wayfinding in the system. I see Dara still has her hand up. Is that still up from before, or do you have more to add? And while we're waiting for Doris, there is a popular lighting project that we need to continue to monitor before Barbara jumps in and tells us we need to look at lighting as it continues throughout the system. Go ahead, Doris.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. With regard to Metro Access, I've asked a number of times over multiple years that we have a briefing on the possibility of WMATA removing the grandfathering and making everybody equal. In other words, what I really mean is changing the service area of Metro Access back to its original service area definition of the entirety of the counties in the original WMATA compact. Loudoun is a thing unto itself, but we have over the years, every time we go down to Richmond, hearing about people, especially young people with disabilities, who are being excluded simply because from using Metro Access throughout the Fairfax County region, just because they weren't even old enough when the grandfathering was put in place. And I really think we should revisit that. I also think on the rail side that I forgot to say that I think we need to have some kind of briefing, and even when it becomes possible to see the stations that are being added on the Silver Line, and to the degree that those and others in the already existing system at the bus terminals, where there is actually a bus terminal and bus bays, that we need to be finding out why we can't add tactile signage to the bus bays so that you know which bus bay you are approaching and can find your bus. It's never been done, and believe you me, when it's a big terminus like Vienna Station, it's impossible without asking somebody for help to be able to find your bus stop. So I think we need to discuss why in creating these new designs for the bus stations, they're being made less accessible for people who are blind and vision impaired.
Point well taken, Doris. And in fact, someone who is not blind or vision impaired, I would have the same comment in some of the large stations and figuring out which bus is which and where we are going. I also think I would like to have some updates on all the brand new real-time apps that are becoming available since WMATA has been collaborating with private developers, things that will help us know what's happening with next train, next bus, et cetera. That would be an informational item. Tina, your hand is still up. And you're muted. No, you need to unmute.
You mentioned, Phil, the electronic messaging in trains, but there's also some new electronic messaging in buses.
No, I mentioned that also.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Yeah, and I was thinking particularly of the buses that I take in Philadelphia when I'm up there that have really good messaging.
Yes, yes.
As to where the next bus is, where the connections are at that particular bus stop, and you know where you're going, and even gives you an estimated time of arrival at the next bus stop.
Some even will tell you how many people are on the bus already, and you can tell whether it's overcrowded or not, and decide to take a later bus.
Well, actually, WMATA has a new app that does that. It has the crowded bus app. so people know about safety as the bus is approaching, whether, you know, it is safe to get on or it'll be overcrowded or what have you. Yes. Anthony, you haven't spoken yet. Your hand is up, and Darnese after Anthony, and then Carol.
And Steve also wants to make some comments, Chair Posner.
Okay, so we're gonna go with Anthony, Denise, Carol, and then Steve.
Hello everyone, this is Anthony. I know we already have it on our general agenda, but I just wanna mention for the record that I think we should continue to focus on the accessibility of messaging and making sure that the messaging of all WMATA documents and things like that are taken care of throughout the year. I know that's something we speak about a lot, but I wanted to say it for the record.
Thank you, Anthony. Darnese?
Oops, can you hear me?
You're okay, you're unmuted.
Okay, basically I just wanna know what updates on the Purple Line, whatever happened with that, and if that's still viable. Yes. And the other thing I want to know is about the supplemental cab and taxi services, when they may be implemented or what the progress of that service is in conjunction with adding more buses to the line.
Carol, maybe you can answer, because Purple Line's out of our purview, but you may be able to answer that. But you also have something else you want to add.
Sure. I actually can't answer the Purple Line just now, but I could. I will next week, because we will have a little bit more information. I wanted to let you know that next week at the Bus and Rail Subcommittee meeting, we're going to have someone speak to us about occupancy predictions in bus and rail, and which is something you just touched on, and I wanted to share that with you, that we will have somebody talking about that.
Thank okay. you, that's great. Yeah, the GEM talked about that at the board meeting.
Okay, okay. And we want to share some ideas that WMATA has come up with in reference to that, so to give you information, so we will be sharing that. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, that's super. Thank you. I don't see any more hands up, and I think we have given enough items to put on a list that we can look at our next meeting.
Dr. Posner, Steve wanted to make some comments.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Steve.
Oh, that's all right. Last but not least, I think. let's remind ourselves to continue to watch the issue with respect to scooters at the entrances and exits to metro stations. You recall that the last we heard of this was that there was going to be a multi-million-dollar project to resolve this, but those kinds of expensive projects take time. And there hopefully are solutions that are less costly that may even begin with a sign. So let's continue to monitor that as time goes on, because that's critical for us.
Now, very good point. We had the contractors come in and present some ideas to us, but it would be good to have follow-up with them as to what's happening.
Okay, and I do see that Patrick has his hand up, so we can take perhaps one more comment.
Certainly, Patrick.
Yeah, mine will be quick, Phil. I'm very interested in the, there's been some good work being done by groups called like Good Maps and others that talk about not only working with making information accessible in rail stations, but also in the surrounding areas within jurisdictions like whole Washington DC area. So that would be interesting to know, you know, with the new technology coming out, some AI research to see how we can incorporate some of that in what we have moving forward. My question for Carol Lopez, since I've been giving bad information out over the last 2 years, what is the last station that's getting truncated domes installed in it?
Patrick, it's the Arlington Cemetery station.
Arlington Cemetery, okay. I would have guessed Twinbrook, but I
So I was wrong. Okay.
All of them have been done. It's been many years through your efforts, the advisory committee. Mr. Blake actually pushed this 6 or 7 years ago, and all of them were done about 5 years ago, except for this one, because something got moved.
Yeah, great to know. Good, thank you. Yes.
Sure.
Thanks, Phil.
Okay, thank you. Doris, one last shot.
Yeah, thank you. When we're doing the micro mobility devices, the e-scooters and bikes, I would like to see us get a briefing on whether the local ordinances that prohibit those devices from being left without being docked could be utilized at metro stations, particularly the outdoor ones, because those stations are on property that the jurisdictions own, and what I'm suggesting is getting some kind of briefing on whether those devices could be considered in the same way that the parking codes allow the jurisdictions to ticket you at metro stations. Like if you park at East Falls Church, Arlington County, and you exceed your time or whatever, Arlington County can ticket you.
Now, one thing we might do that would kill two birds with one stone is invite members from the board from each jurisdiction to come in and talk to us about what their jurisdiction is doing about microtransit scooters, basically. And that way we get a board member to come see us, which is always nice. And we could hear it from the horse's mouth, what they're doing in their jurisdiction. And we can tell them what we're doing. So what I would suggest now, if I can ask Anu to put this together for next month's meeting, and then we can go over it, edit it, and pass a motion and accept it as our agenda for 2021, knowing that our agenda is always flexible. So we can always add things to it. And we take things out as the world changes. So let's move on to old business. And Mr. Blake, you're back from Mar-a-Lago.
Yes, sir.
Seeing you in a dark room someplace rather than out in front of that wonderful palm tree.
That's a good one. Yes, sir. I just wanted to follow up on a couple of items that were brought up in the January AAC meeting, much like we try to do with follow-up in the Metro Access Subcommittee. I think when we have specific items, we should try to respond to them and be specific in our response. So after that last meeting on January the 12th, we made a couple of updates to our website based on discussions that took place during the last AAC meeting. The first thing, there was concern that web booking was difficult to find because you had to scroll down on a page. And what we tried to do is we left the original web booking link where it's located. But now if you go to the Metro Access page, and that's where you go to the WMATA.com homepage service, there's now the Metro Access link that used to be accessibility. And then you click Metro Access and Metro Access again. And now, instead of scrolling all the way down to the bottom of the page, it's literally right beneath the information. When we have urgent messaging, we put it on the Metro Access page. And literally right beneath those messages is the link to web booking. So we didn't move it from its original spot. It's still there for those who know where they've always gone to get it. But we've also moved it up to a more prominent place on the Metro Access page so that it's easier to find for those who found difficulty finding the original Metro Access web booking link.
And on I see Mr. Semelford applauding. So he obviously has seen the change and is happy.
Great. Yes.
Yeah, sir. I was looking at my other computer. It's like, at the top of the main web page, I click on service and I see Metro Access. This is an improvement going all the way down to accessibility, and then click on that and then go through the motions of finding stuff.
Right. That was the first step. And then the next step is move the web booking link. We added a link. Let's just put it that way. That's a more prominent, easier to find. And then a second item that was raised was challenges with the Metro Access, the Accessibility Advisory Committee meeting materials. Now, this is another one. In this case, I'm going to just say for the record, we didn't necessarily find this to be an accessibility issue or a usability issue. However, there was a opportunity there to make it easier, much easier. The web page had directions, if you want, and Anu Sharma gets credit. She had them place this on there, and it would say where to go to get the AAC materials. However, all we simply did is add the link to the end of the sentence. So if we can give you directions of how to go and get the materials to the meeting, why not just add a simple link to that direction and take you right there? So that's what we did for that. So that can be found on the Accessibility Advisory Committee's page. And it says meetings, and the way it originally read was agendas for upcoming meetings are posted on the main WMATA calendar. Well, and that's helpful, and that was direction, and that was clear. But what we did is make the word calendar a hyperlink that takes you right to the meeting materials. And again, that was an opportunity we saw to just do better by our customers. And I'm glad it was pointed out. We look for a reasonable solution, and we think we found one there. And then the third, and I'll take questions. I'm just going through this quickly as a matter of time. The third follow-up was a question was raised to the COO, Mr. Joe Leader, during his presentation about where do we collect the fares for Metro Access. And the question was raised that we shouldn't collect it on the street at the door of the vehicle. Well, If a customer, let me start back by saying, first thing is the driver, the initial bullet in their training for greeting a passenger is good morning, afternoon, or evening. I am your Metro Access operator. I will be driving you today. Then the driver is to check the ID of the customer and request the fare. Then ask, how else may I assist you? At that point, when the driver is requesting the fare, as I pointed out, now this came up during the Metro Access subcommittee meeting a couple of weeks ago. I was going to save it for this meeting, but we talked about it briefly. At the time that the driver greets a customer, he or she is supposed to ask the customer for the fare. So that can be at the door of the customer's home. Now, if a customer happens to already be outside and meets the van at the curb, then that is where the fare collection would take place. It would be at the curb. But as I pointed out during the last Metro Access subcommittee meeting, all customers are encouraged, if they wish, and that's where the driver is asking, all customers are encouraged to pay the fare at the door that they're being picked up from, prior to the driver engaging in door-to-door service to the vehicle. So unless the customer has met the van on the street, or the customer refuses to, or decides they, I don't want to use refuse as a negative, but decides they would not want to pay at their door, then all fare transactions can and should take place at the door if that's the desire of the customer. So I will just say that we're not changing fair collection policy. If the idea and the request was that we're going to wait till the customer is on the vehicle to collect the fare, Metro Access Management, Department of Access Services, man, let me put it that way. We've made a decision, as I stated in the meeting a couple of weeks ago, we're not changing that policy. We want to collect the fare prior to the customer boarding the vehicle. And also, just so you know, because we talked about the Purple Line since that came up, I was thinking about ideas. I don't want people to walk away from this meeting believing, or go away from this meeting believing, that all forms of public transportation, the fare is collected on the vehicle. Yes, the fare is collected on a bus. Yes, the fare is collected within the Metro station. So it's not on the vehicle, but I still consider that part of Metro. But commuter bus lines, fares are collected outside the vehicle. Light rail, like the Purple Line, that may and is most likely is gonna be revised and come back, and Carol will give an update on that. But like the light rail in Baltimore, the fare is not collected on the vehicle. It's collected outside of the vehicle. So we're gonna continue our policy of collecting the fare prior to boarding the vehicle. But I wanted to reiterate that drivers are trained to ask for a fare as soon as they come in contact with the customer. And if that is at the home, at the door of the home of the customer, which should be, or perhaps should be, the safest location to exchange fare, that's where Metro Access would like that fare transaction to take place, if that's where the customer wishes to transfer the money. So I just wanted to follow up on those items that came out of last month's AAC meeting, and I'm available for any questions or comments or other viewpoints on those items and how we chose as a management team to address them.
Thank you, Mr. Blake. As someone who was on the committee at the time this was initially addressed, the major problem was there were passengers that were getting on the van that refused to pay once they were on the van. And there was difficulty in asking them to leave. And it inconvenienced them, it inconvenienced the driver, and it inconvenienced the other passengers, both on the van at the time and also to be the next pickups. So this committee approved the concept of paying the fare before boarding the vehicle because of those incidents. Darnice, I see your hand up.
Okay.
And you're muted.
Wait a minute.
There you go.
Oh. I just want to make a statement. I mean, I agree with that, but is it posted anywhere that says, I think it should be posted a lot of different places, that all Metro fare is due prior to boarding.
This is Paul Somerville. It is clearly stated in the customer guide.
But is it also like on the Metro Access, it should be posted like in other places, like when we have statements about Metro.
I believe also when you call in the main number, at some point you hear that in the recorded voice.
That is that all fares are due prior? Because I don't hear that when I call to make reservations. Because that's what the thing is. Most people say they don't know that, but I'm sure they do. But I think it should be... I think it should be repeated a lot so the people already know that it's due prior to boarding, that way they can't blame the driver or anything, and people will more likely than not have their money ready.
Thank you. Doris, your hand is up.
Yes, I want to say first that I will reiterate exactly what you said, Phil, some time ago it became an issue that people would board the vehicle and then wouldn't pay their fares, and it became a logistical problem delaying other people and all kinds of things. I also want to say that just as Mr. Blake indicated, when you mount a metro bus, you can't walk past the driver and say, I'll pay later. You have to present your cash right then and there, and or your card. And you are, you know, they'll ask you to get off the bus if you don't. So, and in Metro, you obviously have to be paying. You have to have your fare ready on the card and go through the turnstiles. You can't get in and ride. So for comparability with fixed route, it has always seemed fair that you pay before you get on.
Thank you, Doris. Mr. Torres, we're now going into public comment period, so I'll let you take your hand up for what you wanted to ask now and then continue into public comment, because I'm sure you have a public comment. So Mr. Torres, go ahead.
Yes, thank you. I'm assuming you're hearing me?
Yes, very well.
Okay. Number of things. I want to strongly object to the fare collection on the sidewalk or at my door or whatever. I believe it is a nonsensical idea. I believe it is a humiliating, a degrading thing to ask people to do that, because we're talking about equivalency. We are Metro Access. WMATA is always talking about, they're always ready to talk about fixed route equivalency and this equivalency and that equivalency, except when it comes to fare policy. The Metro Access van or bus is a bus. It's not a train. It's not the same thing as the Metro. It should not be compared to the Metro. It is a bus. It's a vehicle that pulls up on the street. And on those buses, the fare is collected on the bus. And if we want equivalency and equality, we have to stick with that standard because that's what it calls for. And anything short of that is blatant discrimination against disabled people. And I strongly object to any system asking me to degrade myself in that fashion. And I think it is shocking that there are disabled people who are willing to go along with that kind of humiliation. I object to it, and I will continue to object to it. And I noticed in Mr. Blake's presentation, he didn't talk about what WMATA was doing. He talked about what Baltimore was doing or the trade. I mean, who cares what goes on in Baltimore? We're not talking about fixed ride equivalency with Baltimore. We're talking about fixed ride equivalency with WMATA. So that's avoiding the issue. It's a shiny object distraction when we need to focus on where the problem is and where the inequality is. And that's my position on that issue. I also have a problem with the way that some, let me specifically say the chairman of the bus rail committee. I was very disappointed with the fact when the presentation was done at the last meeting, the presenter, who was supposed to be someone who is very aware of accessibility issues, did his presentation without making efforts to describe the slides in his presentation. He should have known better. But far more, the representatives on the AAC are supposed to be representing the interests of persons with disabilities as well, including blind people. There are several blind people on the committee, and you cannot have someone doing a professional presentation to your committee and to the public, and the individual is clearly ignoring the needs of someone who is blind. And I remember the chair saying, when the presenter said, "Oh, I have a presentation, a slideshow," and he was glad for the pictures. So his needs were taken care of. He was very happy for the pictures because he could see them. As a blind person, I can't see them. And so I was flabbergasted. And I had to try and make effort after effort after effort to try and get the chair and get the presenter to describe what was going on. I mean, what is this? That was embarrassing. And speaker after speaker that comes before the AAC and the other subcommittees, they tend to do that. And I'm beginning to feel that the reason why this happens is because, you know, you folks who control the AAC, who chair the AAC, you allow it to happen. And that's unacceptable. There's much more that I have to say, but I will stop here. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Chairman, if I could just respond real quick, because sure. I respect what the last, I was about to say call, I'm thinking about my radio days. I respect what Mr. Torres just said. But let me just, for the record, you know, I always like to put things in the record because we always have to have things. When we talk about equivalency, well, if we absolutely want absolute equivalency with our bus customers, if you don't want to use the Purple Line, which is coming and it's going to be in this area, I was just using that as an example, then at some point we're going to have to say no more door-to-door service because that's absolute equivalency, and that's why the fare can be collected on the vehicle and for one instance. Now, let me just say for the record, we're not going to go for that. Even if someone agreed that we can get rid of door-to-door service, we're not going to do that. We're going to continue door-to-door service, but a driver on a fixed route bus does not get off the bus and walks up to the door of a customer and escort him or he or she down to the vehicle. And also, when we talk about equivalency, the part I'm most proud of, because it's the part I've had the most impact on, not the door-to-door service. We inherited that great policy, and we're going to continue to live up to that policy. But when we're talking about equivalency, well, I can tell you one thing, and the general manager was kind enough to concur with my recommendations and moving forward, is that you look at a lot of customers in this region now, particularly in Prince George's County, in the outer parts of Prince George's County, who have access to public transportation called Metro Access, where those who are not qualified for Metro Access do not have access to public transportation. What am I talking about? Of course, I'm talking about us keeping the Metro Access area static, despite now two and going on three rounds of service reductions. So if we want to talk about pure equivalency, well, you don't have that now. You have greater than equivalency, and we're proud of that, and we're going to continue to do the work to make Metro Access efficient so that we can afford to continue to have great, and I'm not talking about grandfathering as well, so let's just be clear. We're talking about all customers currently in the current service area, despite reductions in fixed route services, still having access to public transportation because they're eligible for Metro Access, and we're able to keep that service area expanded, particularly in Prince George's County. So I just wanted to put, it's not to debate the speaker, I'm gonna just put this in the record, is that there is already above and beyond equivalency for Metro Access, and we will not be changing the policy of the fare collection. We believe it's good to collect at the door, or at the minute that the driver meets the passenger. We respect that there's disagreement on that, but we're going to follow and continue on that policy.
Thank you, Mr. Blake. Mr. Orleans, you've been very patient. Please go ahead. You're muted, so unmute before you speak.
Bill Orleans.
Can you hear me?
Yes, you're unmuted.
Good evening, all. First, if I may, Anu, I've missed the last several bus rail and Metro Access Committee meetings because I can't find in your email announcing the full committee meeting any link for those other meetings. So if you could forward those to me, I'd appreciate it. I'd like to comment first on Doris Ray's suggestion from earlier, I certainly think the grandfathering issue should be examined, but I would go beyond that. The transit zone exists throughout the Washington metropolitan area. There should be metro access service throughout the Washington metropolitan area, which is the transit zone, WMATA's jurisdiction. The federal standard of 3/4 mile is a minimum standard. WMATA, I would like to think, could and should exceed that federal minimum standard. And where there is no fixed route service, but there are people who qualify for metro access service needing service, that service should be provided by WMATA. Lastly, I'm no expert on fare collection. Personally, I have long supported fare-free transit. But as it relates to the collection of fares from metro access riders, I still don't understand why they simply can't utilize their smart card and have the fare collected through a smart card machine inside every metro access vehicle. But since I'm no expert on it, I don't know if that's technologically feasible, but it seems to me it should be feasible. So I endorse Doris's concern about the grandfathering. It should be eliminated, but I would go beyond that. Metro Act service throughout the entirety of the transit zone. Thank you very much.
Bill, thank you. Patrick?
Thank you. Speaking with respect to Mr. Torres's issue concerning paratransit and collecting the fare outside the vehicle, to be technically correct, I would say that when I use the rail, I'm paying my fare at the rail station, not inside the rail vehicle. So that goes to Mr. Blake's point also that, you know, there are instances within the WMATA system, even though I'm in the station, the fare I'm paying is at the fare gate and not on the vehicle. So I don't really see where that is an argument that that it really holds much weight. Thanks.
Patrick, thank you.
Can I respond real quickly to Mr. Orley?
Go ahead.
Yeah, just real quick. I mean, you know, over the years, Bill and I, he may not think I've listened to him or agree with a lot of things he says, but maybe he didn't quite understand or hear me. But what we're doing, in fact, is what he's just advocated for. We're not putting it out that the entirety of the service area right now, but we are, in fact, way above and beyond the ADA minimum 3/4 mile standard for the fixed route, for the paratransit service area. So Bill, which you've just advocated for, which I spoke about just prior to you speaking, is the direction we're trying to go. In fact, we're already there, but can we do more? Perhaps, but it all comes with efficiencies and better service operations, and we're trying to get there. But Bill, over the years, you've helped educate me, as I've stated early in the program. I listen to all advocates, and we try to bring good ideas to bear, but we also have to take costs and other factors into consideration. But the idea of the Metro Access Service Area not being just the minimum ADA standard, we're there, and we've been there now for 2.5 years, and next year will be another year.
Great, thank you. Looking at the time, No, I'm.
Hello, may I respond?
No. We're going to let Barbara Melville talk because she hasn't spoken yet. Then we're going to go to our bus rail and then our metro access reports. And then after that, we'll come back to public comment. So, Barbara.
Thank you. I agree with Doris about having a look at these Silver Line Phase 2 stations before it opens up because when Wheelie opened up, that was the end of the Silver Line currently. It was very, very difficult to navigate through there. First time there, I had to go take the rail to the bus into a meeting in Reston. And I'd left plenty of time, but there was just no really good signage for me. Other people didn't know how to do it. And then I finally went down the stairs, and then it was just very, there were signs on the walls, which it's just not really a place where you're going to be looking for signs. When you have more time, if you would like, I could, you know, detail some more examples of what needs to be looked at specifically out. What comes to mind is the Dulles Station, the airport, because so many people are going to be unfamiliar with the layout there. And it's going to be very difficult also because they're going to be with other people. They're going to be carrying luggage and stuff like that. So it has to be really intuitive for it to work. Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara. And we'll go ahead now and let Tino do bus rail and then Paul do metro access, and then we'll come back to the hands that are all raised.
So what you're having me do is go
over the bus rail report.
Yeah, the bus rail report from last month, right?
Yes.
Okay, well, basically, we started with Ms. Bowersox, and Patrick zeroed in on whether the website is 508 compliant. And I think we got into the larger question about any document is 508 compliant. And Carol said that it's being worked on, but it takes time. Christian mentioned that they have a procurement process and that maybe within 2 months from last meeting in January, there might be a chance to hear from the consultants involved in that process. Is that still true, Christian? Are we on schedule?
We're on schedule thus far, knock on wood, and I'm hoping it's going to be even quicker. I'm hoping quicker, but yes, we're on schedule.
Okay. And then we also talked about ART, the Arlington Transit. Interested as I have been in germicidal ventilators, the Arlington Transit representative William Jones said that they're looking into they're considering whether they can mount germicidal ventilators in their buses. We also heard from John Sarbo of the Arlington Transit, and he talked about autonomous electric shuttle and the pilot project that's going on there. And there were questions related to that. One day maybe we should get their view of that. I think that's the only electric shuttle system being tried in our whole region. But anyway, those are the things we covered. And I'll turn it over to Paul.
Yes, please. Paul, go ahead.
So I'm going to give, for my last Metro Access meeting, we had a discussion. We got a big update about the Metro Access customer guide as to where to find it online, with a lot of the suggestions that were incorporated from the committee during our meetings and work group discussions in the past, and the changes will be that need to be made will be done on the online version. We also discussed Mr. Schaefer, the easy pay password update that starting on February 8th on a Monday, on a volunteer basis until March 15th, customers who do regularly use web online web booking for trips will have the ability to change their password. And this will go on during that time period. And if there's any problems, call the eligibility office. But after the 15th of March, and communication, well, my staff will start to be sent to customers. It will be after the 15th of March of this year, it will be forced to change the password for all customers who haven't already done it during that trial period. And we're going to get an update from at the next Metro Access meeting about that. We talked about the paperless manifest project where given COVID now and just overall efficiency and less about paperwork, and the driver can concentrate on things with safety and customers. Paper manifest is going to begin to, over time, go away So customers don't have to, you know, sign and things like that, especially given COVID and things like that. And it just makes the whole process of getting the customer boarded and moving along more efficient. Then we got a Drive Camp update, and that will be discussed at next month's meeting. So for next month's meeting, there will be a discussion about updates for the Metro Access van, web booking site, scheduling and software update, the GPS update, and another update with DriveCam services by Ms. Williams Halls after I've made some observations. With that, that is my summary of my Metro Access report.
Thank you, Paul. And I'd like to go over to a statement from our ADA Ombudsman, David Schaefer, with an update which depresses me no end. But go ahead, David, depress me.
You're on mute, David. I know we all want to hear what you have to say.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
Yeah. So I'm retiring from Metro March 31st. Metro is actually paying me to leave with their retirement incentive program. Of course, I won't be retiring from disability advocacy or civil rights. I'll be going to work in my law firm full time and taking on more class actions against the federal government, actions against websites on accessibility issues and other ADA issues in this area and nationally. And I'm very excited about it. You know, I've been wanting to do this for some time. I wanted to accomplish some things here, and I'm happy to say that I hope I will finally be able to accomplish my final goal on the wayfinding before I leave. And hopefully have more for you next month on that. And, you know, I enjoyed working with all of you. You certainly won't be seeing, you'll certainly be seeing me again. I plan to, after a break, a well-deserved break from these long meetings three times a week, probably take a break for a while, but I'll be popping in. And certainly when we get back to being in person, I want to come down and say goodbye to everybody personally. So thanks for your support over the years. And I want to look forward to finishing this up by the end of March.
Thank David, you. David, thank you. I assume now you're staying in the DMV. You're not heading back to sunny California.
Not yet. Most of my work's going to be, you know, against the federal government here, work with Congress and some other things. So I definitely got to, I'll be staying in D.C.
Feel free to depose any of the members of the committee as witnesses.
Well, see, you
and Mr. Blake.
Dr. Posner, you know, I'm glad David is making this announcement. I'm glad he clarified that, you know, he chose this. This was not our decision. And we certainly, we engaged in some conversations to try to have him not consider this as an option, but I'm happy for him. And whenever you can, you know, I believe in the saying, when you can leave on your own terms, that's probably a good thing. But to your point, Dr. Posner, I said, now, David, you've been my personal lawyer for about 6 years. I'm hoping you're not now going to become my version of Jim Comey or something.
Oh, no, no. I promised Carol I wouldn't sue Metro okay. On behalf of anyone. So you're free and clear. I won't make any promises for
I hear you.
David, this is Pat Sheehan. And I just want to let you know, as far as a federal agent, a small federal agency with 400,000 people in it, we are in great 508 shape, so you don't have to start looking at us. Congratulations, David. We'll be in touch. I want to hear more about that other project you're working on.
Yeah, definitely.
But good for you, sir.
Thank you. We will distribute your business cards at the next meeting.
Okay. Virtual,
Braille. At least. I want them in Braille.
Yes.
Yeah, I already got them. See, I already got CLB put in my business cards in Braille.
There you go. Good for you, David.
Fantastic. And I promise to come back to public comments. So, Mr. Orleans, we cut you off on the last statements you were making. So unmute yourself and finish your attack on Mr. Blake.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Go ahead.
I just wish to respond to Mr. Blake very briefly. I'm all for efficiency, but I do not believe anything, certainly not anything at Metro, comes all down to efficiency. Metro should prepare a budget to meet the transit needs of everybody living in the transit zone. That's all of the district and all of its surrounding counties. And that budget should include appropriate service for Metro access riders, even beyond 3/4 of a mile from a fixed route. And once it has adopted that budget, it should simply bill the jurisdictions for the money necessary to provide the transit service. Effective service trumps, from my perspective, efficiency of operations. So nothing comes all down to efficiency.
Thank you, Mr. Orleans. I will point out, in any budget, it has to be balanced, and it has to have the money there to pay for the services that it provides. And I will remind you biblically that Moses hit the stone because it wasn't giving enough water, and Moses didn't get to go into the Holy Land. I will end with that.
I don't think Annapolis
and let Mr. Torres have the last 4 minutes before we adjourn. Mr. Torres?
Oh.
Are you calling my name?
No, Mr. Torres gets the last talk before
talking about our
interpreters. Go ahead.
Okay. What I wanted to say
Torres, I said Mr. Torres. Answer?
I'm sorry. I didn't hear you.
Ansel, you have 3 minutes. I guess not. Okay, Doris, go ahead. You get the last 3 minutes.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that, Bill, you misunderstood, and my comment about grandfathering and the service area was right on track with what you're asking, because what you're asking is to go back to the original service area, and we need to discuss the ins and outs of that. The thing with the grandfathering is that it sets up a disparate group of people with disabilities, one grandfathered and one not grandfathered. So anyway, but that's a matter of discussion. And I want to say my congratulations to David. You have been wonderful. And I look forward to hearing about what you're doing. And by the way, please check into the federal website of the Department of Health and Human Services called VAMS, the vaccination website, which has inaccessibilities and incompatibilities. And you should be looking at that because it's of immediate nature. Thank you.
Doris, thank you. And we are 1 minute.
Dr. Posner, I believe Terry and Williams Hall would like to make an announcement.
Oh, please go ahead. You've got the last minute.
I am so sorry, David. I think in all of the we forgot to share about the enrollment on the website. So just wanted to remind everyone that enrollment option begins on February the 8th. We've sent out numerous communications, but I just wanted to make sure that we put that out tonight.
Yep. Enrollment options for renewal of their.
This is for web booking where we check the password.
Okay, that's fine. And on that note, I'm going to, without objection, adjourn so that the translators can actually go home on time and everybody can have a safe trip as they go through the snow. And see you all next week for Bus Rail. Great meeting and a great ceremony. Thank you.
Thank you. Excellent meeting. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, this could be the as we get out of the JGB type of talk, and we've already all of us from ADAP are gonna miss David tremendously as well.
And we've told them, at the beginning, I was extremely saddened by him leaving, but I told him I'm very happy for him and all the goals he has to help people after WMATA. So we look forward to seeing what he does.
Yeah. Yes, you know, I can hire him to sue to have the escalators in the up division away from the entry gates and down.
He's not allowed to sue us for anything.
Oh, that was part of retirement? You had a no suit clause?
No, I'm just,
I know. We
pleaded.
Yeah, no, I can't afford him anyway.
I share your sentiment. Exactly.
One of the interpreters. I have a quick question for you.
Yes.
This is for Anu. I'm so sorry. Dr. Posner. This is for, oh, Lord have mercy. I have a date that I wanted to just make sure that I was seeing that have we gone over or not. So give me just